Welcome to the 11th episode of All Things Crypto, an Elk Finance podcast. I'm Shiloh, also known as LT Snake Plissken.
And I am Fareed.
So today we're discussing NFTs. That's right, non-fungible tokens.
Please keep in mind we are not financial advisors, and this is not a financial advice. If you want that kind of thing, please find a licensed advisor in your area.
And we're always open to feedback, so check us out on Telegram and give us a message. Tell us directly at t.me/elk_finance_chat, or check out our website at elk.finance.
Perfect. So with that introduction behind us, let's start the questions here. So what is an NFT?
So an NFT is a non-fungible token, a token that isn't fungible. I think we can end the episode.
Perfect. That was the shortest episode we've ever had.
So an NFT, that's right. It does stand for a non-fungible token, all jokes aside. But to really understand it, we need to describe a little bit what makes this kind of token different from a traditional token. So traditional tokens were created after what's called the ERC-20 standard. And the ERC-20 contract type basically refers to any general cryptocurrency generally on any different blockchain. You know, so you've got these type of tokens on the Avalanche blockchain, on the Ethereum blockchain, hence of course the E, right? You know, there's slight variations of it, like on the Binance Smart Chain they've got the BEP20, all followed basically a similar format. And basically, you dictate a specific supply of tokens, you know, to start with. Some are inflationary. There's more tokens. Some are deflationary. They decrease in amount. But the thing is, if I hold 2 Bitcoins, let's say on the Bitcoin chain, right? On maybe the Lightning chain, let's say, you can't tell one token apart from another. They're not unique. So I can send one of my Bitcoins to Fareed, because apparently in this alternate example reality, I'm super rich. So
I would be very grateful.
Right?
Yeah.
I could send him one Bitcoin, but without tracing it back to me, you couldn't really tell which one of my 2 Bitcoins I sent him. There'd be no way to tell.
Like you did the other one,
right? Yeah, exactly. And there's no way to tell them apart. They're simply just a kind of a general amount. And of course, Bitcoins aren't necessarily ERC-20 standard. They, you know, on their own blockchain, they are when they're put on, you know, wrapped on Ethereum or another blockchain. But we won't get into that. It overcomplicates things. So it's kind of like you could tell a different dollar bill from another dollar bill. And you could mark one bill, you mm-hmm. know, and you would know, and they all have serial numbers, and you could tell one apart from the other. But that's really not how it works here. Each token in each wallet isn't really an object. So all this to say, they are fungible, right? They're able to be replaced by another identical token. They're mutually interchangeable, exactly the same. So that's where NFTs are of a different type than that ERC-20 token. And they're usually using a different contract, commonly an ERC-721 contract. Don't worry about these numbers. I'm just telling you so you have the info. But the difference between this contract and the ERC-20 contract for the regular tokens is that they can be attached to a different picture, file, anything permanently, so that you can tell each token apart. Now, you know, with an ERC-721, the standard NFT contract, and contract just being the code that allows, you know, a token to exist, basically, it would make, you know, each unique token unchangeable. You could, if I sent one NFT to Fareed or both my NFTs, you could tell them apart because they would each be attached to a different picture. Although they would both, you know, if they're in the same set, they would could be both under the same smart contract, the ERC721 contract. So you could tell that they're in a group, but each token is linked to a different thing and a different number, a different picture, a different file, and also would have a different identity. Mm-hmm. So that's kind of where, you know, the traditional tokens would just be all just under the same contract, but they're not really unique. And I don't want to get into it, but there's also the ERC-1155 standard, which works a little bit differently than the ERC-721 contract. We're not going to get into it, but some users, you know, and developers love it because you can kind of keep minting in the same set while, you know, these ERC-721s, you can only mint like a certain amount.
Okay. Yeah. So is it like a, something like a ever expanding?
Yeah. You could kind of keep going, and I think you can put a cap on it, like, but it's just more customizable, but it's not a, you know, it's a love hate thing. And when we say mint, basically that means, pay for the creation of under a contract. So, you know, let's say I have 10 different, you know, NFTs I want generated, or I have a specific picture associated with, and somebody bought 5. When you're initially maybe buying them, or you're the developer who's going to create them to sell them, you have to mint them. Mm-hmm. And mint them just means to write it to the blockchain permanently.
Oh, okay.
And the rules for minting, creating with the 721 contract, you would just be able to mint a certain amount, while the 1155 is a little bit more customizable and works a bit differently. But it is
interesting.
Yeah.
Aren't NFTs just pictures of really expensive apes and stuff?
They can be. They simply can. They can be. And I think we're when we kind of hear about NFTs, you know, a lot of people in the public, you know, are like, who would pay, you know, X amount of dollars for some ridiculous picture?
Hey,
you know,
because I don't know, $2 million for a bored ape?
Yeah. It's actually sounds a little ridiculous.
Okay, yeah. Good to see that I'm not the only one who thinks that way.
Yeah. I mean, it wouldn't catch me necessarily investing in that. But even if I had, you know, the money. But I think it doesn't give NFTs, it doesn't really describe what NFTs actually are or could be. I mean, it's always talked about to be a picture of some art, but an NFT could be anything, a non-fungible token. You can assign a specific token to you know, a video. Could be a video, you know, it could be you know, a signed contract, like a deed or a document. You could even use it to signify ownership, for example, right? If you had an NFT of that contract, you know, and it was legally binding, it could be in the future a way to prove that, you know, you're the owner. You prove that this is your address and that you own the contract. You could use it as a way to prove ownership of a house or something. You know, it has a lot of kind of a lot of variety of use, as long as someone doesn't steal your seed phrase.
Fair enough. Let's talk about the safety and security of these NFTs. What is IPFS, and how does it relate to the blockchain and NFTs?
It's a good question. You kind of see it a lot if you look at contracts and you look at the code. You'll often see, you know, IPFS or BZZR, you know, these different platforms. And it's like, what is even going on? What is that? So IPFS stands for Interplanetary File System, which in itself sounds really futuristic.
It does.
Yeah. So it basically allows users to kind of host and receive files, anything. And it works like BitTorrent. So it's not like a centrally kind of located server that's just sitting somewhere and people access like a traditional website that's hosted on a platform, for example. So IPFS is kind of built around a bunch of different users sharing a portion of the data. So in that sense, it's decentralized. So it kind of, there's some redundant backups, there's backups of backups, and it's kind of a resilient system of file storage and sharing, because if one machine goes down, there's another to replace it because it's got similar, another part of the data or parts of the data are stored somewhere else. So any user could serve a file or host a file, you would have access to it by having its content address, which, you know, you would share this content address and anyone in the network could find and request that content from any node that has it, i.e. like if you're hosting it, right? This content address could often be a hash. And like I said, it links to the file. And, you know, it could be used for really a lot of things. It's kind of one of the hugest ways, one of the best ways to kind of decentralize and make storage kind of anonymous. So actually probably worth its own episode for a deep dive. It's really cool, really complicated, and really, really useful. You know, certain people might want to use it if certain governments ban content, they can access it without actually having to reference the file itself. You know, they can just reference this hash that references it. And if, like, you know, that gets blocked, for example, that hash fetch, you know, they could use, somebody else could upload it from a different country and it would have, it slightly changed the file. It would have a different, hash content address they could fetch. So, it can kind of stay ahead that way.
Mm-hmm.
So important to note that this, you know, hash that IPFS references, when I say hash, it's a randomly generated kind of line of numbers and letters. And what that is like this hash is generated by, you know, looking, the computer looks at any picture, file, video, anything of any size, and it basically runs it through a specific algorithm and gets the same result no matter where it's run, on which machine, it'll get the same. If you change one little thing in the file, you'll get a completely different hash. So, I mean, it's useful into determining, you know, the NFT you have and the picture you have, let's say, matches exactly the one on the blockchain. You can for sure guarantee, you know, its authenticity because you can see which hash it was uploaded with. You can match it.
Do you want to talk about our experience on the exercise we did?
Yeah,
that was fascinating.
Yeah, it was mind-boggling for us. We tried this a version of this function. It's called SHA sum, S-U-M, and you know it's a function that we were playing with, and we couldn't for the life of us figure it out. And Ball had to explain to me how it worked, but it's fascinating. So basically what you could do with this function is you would say, hey, check out this file, and it would generate this hash.
Yeah, we are talking about a bunch of really random, simple PNG files, if I remember correctly.
Yeah, that's right, yeah.
Yeah, so just for the context. And it was very interesting, you know, because we were literally generating a file and going in and just changing one pixel.
Yep. And we're getting a completely different result from the hash we got when we generated before the save. So we of course upped the game and did it with like a 200 gigabyte file. Yep. And same thing. It even if we changed one little piece of it and it still worked, we would get a completely different result. So we were super puzzled at how this worked. But like the fact is, you could run this function on any computer with a copy of the exact same file with no changes, and it would give you the same result. The way we found out it kind of worked is something called a one-way deterministic function. So basically, that being said, every file is made up of ones and zeros, also called bits, right? And basically all of these bits, eight of them, actually add up into a byte. And then that's how you get, sizes of files, right? You get kilobytes, megabytes, terabytes, gigabytes, comes from there. But what this function would do would basically, in short form, add up all the ones and zeros in those groups of eight, and, kind of take off one digit and add every, million, 2 million, 3 million, billion bytes together, and then add them together again, add them together again, until it got a number small enough to fit in a line. And it would give you the same one be on every computer because it would add it the same way, which is really interesting. You can't go, obviously, back from the hash that was generated, that string of numbers, because there's not enough information to go back and generate the whole file. But each file would generate a new piece. So even if you changed one byte, one bit in there, you changed a zero to a one, it would like that on that first round, you might get a difference of one in its first run through. But then when it adds them together again and again and again, the change is exponential, and you end up with a completely different hash because all those numbers add up to different letters and everything spills out totally differently. So it kind of blew our minds.
It was very fascinating, because that was the fastest way of checking authenticity of a document, any file,
It took
in
like
such a quick manner,
so
and
quick.
it was extremely accurate. It was mind-boggling.
And we couldn't figure it out. And even like a 200 gigabyte file, we thought like it only took like 10 seconds, but less than that, like 5 seconds to not even maybe.
Because that was the part which was very surprising to me, because I always thought that we need the original file to check the authenticity, but that was not the case. Maybe this is a conversation for another episode if there is any interest out there. Maybe the other question is here is how can NFTs be useful, you think?
So I think there's a lot of different ways they can be useful. One of the concrete ways that we see currently is really the freedom of an artist. They could share their own brand. Anybody has access to the blockchain if they have access to a computer, a phone even, and the blockchain. They have the internet. They can do that. So it kind of puts some power back in the hands of individuals who want to share their art and get it out there and have it evaluated for what it is.
I never thought about it that way. Actually, that is a very useful way of giving all the artists out there a little bit of a platform to just sell their own art.
And traditionally in regular, art, it's really competitive, and there's a lot of limits, so it's kind of a new way to do that. But of course, NFTs aren't really l limited to art, just as we kind of talked about before.
Maybe I should have used the word content.
It's content. Like any content, you could take like music, make that into an NFT. You could own like the first track by somebody if they chose. Of course, anyone could have a copy of that, but the blockchain would record that you have the rights to that first copy, and that's stored there forever. The link to the file, so you can verify its authenticity. Not everyone's into that, sure, because some people might not see the value, but that's okay. We don't all have to agree on it. And if you like it, you like it. In terms of use, take for example the Moose, the Elk Finance NFT. It's a nifty GIF, but it's really just a ticket to allow the minting of a proxy token on any chain that you have a Moose on. So, and of course, we dive into this a little more in our episode 9 of our podcast. We kind of flesh it out in more details. But for example, it provides holders coverage for impermanent loss at twice the rate of, not having a moose. So in 21 days versus 42. So, we've got a use. In terms of other uses for other NFTs, like I mentioned before, you could use it to show ownership of something, like a car. Or people could even put their will on there, right? And you know, it could be on the blockchain, and you know it's written,
Never thought
and
about it that way,
right?
actually. Yeah, I
Yeah.
should just make my will as an NFT.
Yeah, that's right. And you could.
Yeah.
Yeah. You know, just don't you lose your seed phrase, your private key, if you've got your house deed on there, right? But NFTs come into play a lot with the gamification. So like blockchain games, that's also worth its own episode, like especially taking into account the metaverse and kind of things that are evolving there. We're seeing it in its infancy. You know, NFTs could be in the form of a specific character for a game, you know, weapons for that character, items, you know, could be NFTs that are used to make your character unlock new abilities, like the Elksworn armor in the Dragon Crypto Gaming game, The Legend of Aurum Draconis, for example, which, you know, I played a demo of, and it's actually pretty fun. It's really awesome. I'm actually pretty excited for it. But yeah, so NFTs can be used for that. They can be a great investment if you believe they'll keep their value. You know, just like traditional art, it's kind of a way of hedging against inflation and keeping your value long term. So think about it, if you owned a Mona Lisa, which you know for sure will always be valuable because, you know, always, right? So that's going to cost more money as inflation increases, and can be a good investment. But it's up to you to wonder if your bored ape would be, you know, as valuable as it is in 10 years or more. Maybe. Who knows? You know, so if you're willing to bet, right?
Yeah, absolutely. So what are the downsides of NFTs?
Yeah, so there are some downsides, and it can be sketchy out there sometimes. So people might, you know, buy and sell NFTs to themselves. You know, they might list on an exchange like OpenSea or Abyssus Bay on Kronos, and you know, they list the NFT, let's say, and then they buy it from themselves with a different address. And sometimes people do that shiftily to make it look like their NFTs have been, you know, bought and sold for more. And because you can see a history of any NFT if they've been bought or sold on a platform. So then maybe new users might think it's a higher price, because they think two different users have bought and sold it and the value has increased. And then they buy it and realize, you know, maybe it wasn't worth anything. So that can be a risk. So always do your own research when buying an NFT and make sure it is actually considered valuable. You know, and of course, most people who like NFTs just like them, and they're operating morally, and they're following the rules. There have also been, you know, stories about people using that method above, where you buy and sell NFTs to yourself in order to launder money. You know, it just looks like you bought an NFT from someone for, you know, X amount of dollars, but really the person who's the seller, so to speak, would get, you know, let's say this illegal money, and they could say, "Oh, what do you mean? I just sold my NFT," and they claim they don't know that other address. Oh, someone bought it, right? So I mean, there's that side of it. Although I don't think that's definitely not the majority of things. So these guys really kind of give crypto and DeFi a bad rap in general. But yeah, just like crypto, they can be risky, you know. Who knows if they would retain your value if you had invested in them? Like, you know, the other risk, right? Like the guy who put his Bored Ape up for 0.75 ETH and he meant to put it for 75 ETH. Minor, small $300,000 mistake.
Oh man, if I make that mistake, it's going to take a little bit of time for me to come back from
I
it.
heal?
Yeah. So, what are your criteria for choosing an NFT?
Well, I'm biased. I really prefer utility, and like in real life, I'm not gonna go out to an art gallery and buy some art. So I'm maybe not the best person to talk about art NFTs, but that's why I love, you know, things that do stuff, right?
Yeah,
And
yeah.
you know, it's cool to have things, but like people love collecting things like baseball cards and stuff like that. And I was just never as much into that. But some people really like it, and yeah, don't yuck someone's yum, you know?
You know, absolutely, you're right. But I'm on the same side as you. I always look at it in a sense of a utility. rather than just being a picture. Sorry, I
Exactly.
interrupted you.
Yeah, no, that's okay. But yeah, that's hence kind of the moose, right? For elk. And people really like the original ownership proof that NFTs really provide on the blockchain. It can't be changed. Some NFTs, it's good if you think something's going to be big. Some NFTs provide kickbacks, like a share of the funds that future users use to mint or pay for or sell or buy NFTs. So if someone buys something in the same set and you bought the second one, you get a kickback from maybe the third one and the fourth one and the fifth and so on. So you could make a decent profit if you get in something early enough that is legitimate.
Is that pyramid scheme?
Well, yeah, in a way it is, because you got to get in early, right? So it's tricky. But if you can and you think it'd be valuable, go for it. But also be cautious if you're minting this, NFT and you're the last on the list. I mean, take a gander and wonder, unless you're not paying too much, but who knows? Some NFTs could be staked to earn passive income. They might secure an investment and divvy it out to users, or it might be in preparation for a token to raise money for things like Elk. We sell our moose to raise liquidity to launch our token on the next chain, for example, especially a big one. If you really like gaming and you're into the metaverse and gamification, why not? Get an avatar or a character, or a weapon or armor to help build your character if you like doing that. Just, don't invest more than you can afford to spend. But at the end of the day, if you think it's cool, you want to support an idea, an artist, a game developer, do it, Just be careful and always do your own research.
Yeah, so it just goes back to what we are saying, I don't know, since the very first episode. Just be reasonable and just do your homework before you get in.
And make sure that the platform, the NFT marketplace, is legitimate. Do all those research pieces before you invest.
Perfect. With this question, we come to end of the 11th episode. I want to thank everybody out there who is listening to us. And we will hope to see you in on our 12th episode.
All right. Thanks so much, guys. And leave us some feedback in the Elk Telegram at t.me/elk_finance_chat. And check out our website at elk.finance. I'm LT Snake Plissken, and this is Fareed. And we will catch you next time.